Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What do you think of Monty? It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century, from I Love Lucy to News Radio, and I'm your host, Barb Hardley, who sometimes, when I am not dressed like a woman, I'm a reporter-producer for Decider.com named Brett White, and say hello to the Fonzie, to my pinky, Ethan Kay. Hello, Ethan.
Hello, Barb, and I'm very interested to see what you think of Monty.
Oh, I love your cat.
My cat is named Monty. He's a big old boy with very itchy skin and diabetes, but we love him.
Henry Winkler, maybe too. We don't know, but
he is very public with his struggles with dyslexia.
Hell yeah. There's a dyslexic joke in this episode. Anyway, before we get into our what we watching now and stuff, I do want to tell everyone that I am dressed beautifully. So go to
wonderfully beautifully.
I'll try to stand and show off that my bow. This is a dress that I messed up. And I hope you can't tell. I don't know.
We're doing a show from the 90s, but this dress says 50s after hours. This is, you know, there's people coming over and we're gonna open up the home bar.
This is my Lisa Douglas is hosting people over in our penthouse on Park Avenue. we're never going to leave this place. My husband Oliver is so handsome. I'm from Hungary. This is my drag character.
A new character tonight only.
I mean, Barb is slowly morphing into Ava Gabor, which is honestly fun for me. It feels great to look this pretty. I don't know.
That makes you feel good. I'm happy for you that you're feeling good, that you're looking good.
Yes, and strike. We solidarity with the writer's strike, baby.
Yes. I am wearing a strike shirt. It's a black shirt that has the word strike in the same letters as Spaceballs. In support of the Writers Guild strike. And you never know, starting in another couple of weeks, we might get a SGA, a SAG strike too.
Fingers crossed. We
could get both of those working together to get better wages and better residuals for everybody involved. And
I want to point out that the battle that they are fighting right now is the battle that is going to affect literally every single human being on Earth. This is the first time that we are saying, hey, maybe the robots shouldn't do everything. Maybe AI was a stupid idea, as, I don't know, every movie that's ever been made has led us to believe. Ooh.
My damn head.
I fully do believe that this is the front line. This is the first lines that will keep a lot of us employed. You listen to this. You might think that your job has nothing to do with the writer's strike. I think it probably does.
It will down the line.
And because CEOs are going to see, oh, robots could do this. Okay, sure.
I was at a family gathering yesterday in Philadelphia, just outside of Philadelphia. And that was one of the questions that I got asked. So how does AI affect your job? Are you going to lose your job? Ugh. And it's, believe me, it is not the first time I've gotten that question.
It's not
the second, third, or fourth, or fifth time I've gotten that question.
Every time I complain about some of the stuff I have to do at work, the response is always, man, ChatGPT could just do that. And let me tell literally everyone in the world, that is not the good response. That's not a good response to literally anything. That is not a comforting response. No. That is not the right response. Let's stop saying that. Because I bet ChatGPT, no, it couldn't do that. And if it did, that'll be bad because then I wouldn't have a job. So let's not even fuck with that.
Let's say in the perfect situation that AI can do this. That means that anybody that puts pen to paper, fingers to keyboard, will lose their job. But, okay, let's have a universal basic income. So that we can have the robots do the work, so people can relax and create art and do the things that ChatGPT can't do. But that's not going to happen.
Republicans won't want that. It's very much like, well, we're not going to teach you about sex education, and we're not going to provide you with birth control, and we're going to make you have the baby, but then we're actually not going to help you take care of it. We're like, it's very that, like, we're going to, anyway, fuck.
Chill down my spine.
Yeah, we live in a nightmare. But so what are you watching lately? I'll tell you about, I'm watching Silo on Apple TV Plus.
You're the second person in 2 days that said, are you watching Silo?
Silo's so good. Which I'm I've seen the whole thing because I have this job. I finished it yesterday. I think only the first four have aired. It is great. It is a gorgeous, wildly comprehensive, really good production design. But do you know about the premise? And would you want to live in the silo?
I think, isn't it something where people live in a silo and can't go out of the silo?
They don't know why they're in the silo. They cannot ask why.
Is it the same ones that people can't get off the train with okay. David Diggs?
Yeah. So
just it's on its side or a different way, vertical?
The show takes place in a silo. The 10,000 people live in a silo, and it is essentially like it's a cylindrical town. So there's like 130 floors, and every floor is, you know, round, and there's a spiral staircase going through the middle. So like all the production design, all the little apartments are very, you know, tiny house, and all the walls are all rounded. Like there are no windows because it's underground.
It's underground.
So, so the production design is very claustrophobic and really cool, but it is set, basically these 10,000 people live in a silo, and they live there because they've always lived there. 140 years ago, there was a rebellion, basically like what the history that the government has allowed to be passed down is that 140 years ago, a whole bunch of rebels rose up and like tried to escape the silo. But in the ensuing fight, all of their history was burned. They destroyed the library. And so like so this is 140 years after all of their collective knowledge was destroyed. None of them know why they're there. They don't know if it's actually safe outside or not. The government very much wants them to believe that it's not safe out there. And every now and then they'll find a relic, which are highly illegal. And one of them is a Pez dispenser. There's kind of also like Planet of the Apes vibes in that way too. So it's very interesting. And Rebecca Ferguson is so good.
Isn't that The Village, the M. Night Shyamalan movie?
Yeah, except better. This is good.
Oh, okay.
Because I hated that movie.
I don't know.
The aesthetic's very like Mystery Science Theater in a way, because it feels like the silos were designed in the 70s, and now we are like, we're now at the silos after like 300 years of use, and like there's no manufacturing down there, so like everything is 300 years old or something. So it's like everything has just been passed down from person to person, patched up. So it's a gorgeous, weird looking show, and I like that.
I'm a little skeptical because the two genres that I kind of stay away from are post-apocalyptic and war films. Like, I cannot watch a war movie at all. I find them extremely disturbing and kind of tedious. Well,
there's no war in this.
But post-apocalyptic is kind of like, I've seen a couple of them and they don't interest me. I'd rather just die.
Feels more Brave New World 1984. Because so the society that's in the silo more or less is running fine. Like, it's dirty because it's old. But it's cool learning about this world. So it's more like sci-fi in that way. And it's like the apocalypse is somewhere else. You know, like we know the apocalypse was somewhere, but the show isn't about that. The show is a detective show because she's trying to figure out who murdered her, the guy she loves. So there's a lot of she keeps finding evidence that points to people in charge not doing the right stuff. And so it's her versus the system. And I love me some of that. Mm.
Okay. So more like a Logan's Run kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very Planet of the Apes, because it's very you root for Bright Eyes when he's like, I can talk, damn it. We've got out his brain. Yeah. Anyway.
That's a segue. You're going into the future via the past. I'm going into the past via the future with White House Plumbers.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so much fun. Woody Harrelson and Justin Theroux are great together. Justin Theroux is hilarious. The show is about the Watergate break-in, but it is done with these completely inept secret agents who are not really secret agents. They're just inept. And it's all true, and it's all celebrities, it's all celebrity cameos, and it's on HBO, and Megan enjoyed it, I am enjoying it, I'm one episode behind, but I gotta say, White House Plumbers, funnier than it has any right being.
Well, it's from, isn't it David Mandel who did the second half of Veep, I do believe?
Is that the case?
I think so, because that's why I heard about it and was interested in it, so... I need to get on that.
Just watch the first episode and give it a thumbs up, thumbs down, because I love the first episode. I love the second episode. Third episode is we just have to get around to it. We've been busy. You've been traveling. We've been traveling. This is why we haven't recorded an episode in a little while.
It's been fun.
I was in Boston and Philadelphia. You have been in St. Louis.
Long Island.
I was in Manhattan for a little bit.
Oh, so was I.
Oh, I never go to Manhattan. And I got to say, it was a good Manhattan trip. I'm enjoying the train ride. But again, we've been traveling.
Well, sorry, I had to lick my gloves to access the touchpad. And you love it. well, this time we'll be traveling. Speaking of the word travel. To January 11th, 1994, when Philadelphia ruled the box office, Hero by Mariah Carey topped the charts, and Fox aired the Monty pilot episode, Here Comes the Sun. Ethan, you must have seen Here Comes the Sun before today.
I might have.
Really?
The reason that we're doing this is we were looking for a show from the 90s, and I thought maybe we poll people, and then I just remembered. The show that had Henry Winkler, that had David Schwimmer, that had David Krumholtz, who's great in everything, FYI.
Yes.
And I watched the third episode at least the third episode. And I was like, this is well written. It was funny. There are jokes that stayed with me today. So I believe I probably saw the first and maybe the second episode. I definitely saw the third. And that was it. They didn't show any after, I believe, the fifth episode.
Oh,
they
really? It got canceled that fast?
The history behind this show is, I can guarantee you that probably 99% of our viewers and listeners do not remember this show, cannot quote this show. It is rightfully buried. Maybe rightfully. I don't know. I remember it being funny.
It is. I will say, it is one of the shows. There is an elite... mini micro generation of shows that are incredibly important to human cultural history. This is one of them because if this is one of the shows that if it had gotten a second season, Friends would not have had David Schwimmer.
Mm-mm.
And therefore, because also Jennifer Aniston was also on another sitcom at this exact time that, or like it debuted the same day as Friends, like it was on at the same time or something. And she basically had to beg them to let her out of her contract. So they're all,
ooh,
some of these shows. Well, and also Lisa Kudrow was on Bob.
Yeah.
She was on a couple of episodes of Bob, like two or three as a recurring character. So it's like, you know, if that had gotten picked up, they should have snatched her up. But yeah, so Monty is wildly the ripple, the butterfly effect that could have.
So the conceit behind the show is Henry Winkler plays a Rush Limbaugh-esque television personality who deals with a family life that is surrounded by liberals. It's something that's been done before.
Baby.
It's all in the family. So this came out in 1994. This is striking while the Rush Limbaugh iron was hot. So the backstory is this was sold to NBC in 1993.
That makes so much more sense.
And the pilot was this conservative television host. His daughter comes out.
That would have been groundbreaking.
This is 1994, was 2 years before Ellen came out on Ellen. This is before Spin City with Carter, who was a regular gay character. And
this is like Friends was notable for having Ross's ex-wife, who was a lesbian. And that's like season one, fall 94. That's like right first couple episodes. So like, yeah, that's wild.
But they didn't have any faith in the series, so they sold it to Fox. Fox said, we don't like that. Now, I think this was kind of before Fox went down the road of paranoid conservatism, which was, I want to say, later 90s.
Well, it's weird. Like, so Fox is a network. Fox, the network, has always been super edgy. And even today, like, I mean, its ethos does not line up with Fox News. Like,
no,
it's
not
so
at
weird
all
to me that, because you say Fox, and if we're talking, depending on the context, I only think of one or the other and never the two together.
No.
Because they're different.
What was Fox in the 90s? The Simpsons, Married with Children.
Most anti-conservative, like
exactly.
Make my parents angry TV shows. Married with Children? Jesus.
So, Monty, they shot 13 episodes. The conceit changed from gay daughter to David Schwimmer doesn't want to be a lawyer. He wants to be a chef.
Which is like, I mean, in the year 2023, you know, the wonders Top Chef has worked on all of us. Because I'm like, cool, he's going to another prestigious, well,
yes,
you're going to make a lot of money career.
Exactly.
It is a hard
one. The show, I think it showed five episodes and then they pulled the plug on it.
Ugh.
The 13 episodes do exist. I would love to see them.
Oh, I would love that.
Because I felt that this show, the jokes were better than a whole bunch of other series that we've watched.
Oh, yeah. This also reminded me of the Paul Lynde show.
Yeah, very much so.
Building around a central father character who's just angry and yelling the entire time.
And his entire family is against him.
Yeah.
Henry Winkler produced it. He starred in it. It had such a great cast. David Schwimmer again. David Krumholtz from Numbers, Adam's Family Values.
Oh, that's what he's. Numbers was his. Is now his main. Because I'm
Santa Claus.
Adam's Family, Santa Claus.
And some of the other it was created by Mark Lawrence, who was a writer for Family Ties.
Also wrote Miss Congeniality.
Exactly.
And 2019's Christmas holiday hit, Disney Plus, Noel. Check and make sure if it's still on Disney Plus, though.
Oh my God.
Who knows?
I did watch that. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's fine.
And David Schwimmer's girlfriend, that's the other thing, is David Schwimmer comes back from a trip to Europe with a new, very liberal girlfriend, decides he wants to be a chef, a vegetarian chef.
Vegetarian. She's got a nose ring. Oh, boy. Yeah.
She is played by Chyna Kantner. And that name might not ring a bell because she stopped. She's retired from acting. She did a lot of work in the 90s. But her parents were Paul Kantner and Grace Slick from Jefferson Airplane.
Oh my god, sorry. No, I that, because like watching the episode, I mean, honestly, I do not have, Grace Slick does not take up much memory in my memory, but you saying that, it all makes total sense.
And they look very similar. They have the same voice.
Like, wow, that's wild.
So I adore both of them. Paul Kantner unfortunately passed away. Grace Slick is still alive. I've been trying to buy a print of hers on an auction site for months, for years, and someone just keeps bidding just above me.
That's rude.
And then it ends up back on the auction site again. So I don't know what the deal is.
It's a cursed item. Anyway. Well, this week on Must Have Seen TV, we'll be talking about the Monty episode, Here Comes the Sun. It's the first episode of season one. It was written by Mark Lawrence and directed by the legendary James Burrows. So that's how you know they thought it was going to be good.
He created Cheers.
God. Here's how syndicated newspapers describe this episode to audiences to try and entice them to watch. Monty's son returns from France. Ethan, how accurate is that description?
You're like, is there conflict? Okay.
Who is Monty?
Was there a war in France? Well, there was, not at this time.
It's like, this is the first episode. You can't just Monty's son. Like, who is that?
Here Comes the Sun. That's the name of the episode.
Yeah, which is kind of indicative of like the humor you're going to get in this.
It's a lot of caricature.
Funny. Yeah.
It's a lot of caricature. Monty, Henry Winkler is played as a very broad, non-specific conservative. So when he takes a pot shot at the Democrats, he's like, we're playing a game called Pin the Lie on the Democrats. Does not go into any more detail, does not detail any lies. It's just something that we are taking on faith that's what he's going to eventually get to.
So the episode opens with an example of his talk show, which I don't know, what is the name of his talk show?
It's Monty.
Oh God. It's the show Monty. Within the show is Monty. Wow. And he's on Long Island's Channel 35, which, so, I mean, the fact that this show stars Long Island, New York, conservative Jewish family feels very like, could only exist in the 90s. I don't know.
It's like, the 90s, baby.
I don't 90s. Know. I'm from Tennessee, so I assume anyone on Long Island's a Yankee liberal.
The only place you can see this also is YouTube. There's a full episode, and then someone took the first episode and split it in half. So you can find either one of those. I wish we could find more of them, the other 13.
The one that I watched also had the commercials intact. So
So we got Little Caesars, commercial for a buck. Midas, mufflers. And then the Bobbitt trial. It's her turn to talk.
Hell yeah. So at the TV station where he's hosting his very weird show that feels like it feels like this is a concept for the show was concocted by people who've never seen how TV works, because so the set looks like his office. The set looks like Monty's office, because it has like his desk, etc.
Yeah, fake books, a flag. Yeah,
later, I was like, is he in his office? Why is he talking to the camera? No, this is the set. But he apparently sits just almost offset so that he can talk to his producer, who is sitting in a folding, in like a director's chair, just around the corner, offset,
and talking to her. So the audience, the studio audience can see them. And also the audience at home has to know that he's talking to somebody because they're having a conversation. So she has to be in the camera show within the show.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I'm assuming if it's like, you know, Home Improvement with Tool Time, like what we're seeing is the edited version that was broadcast in this universe. But it's still weird to be like, half of the set is off stage, which is the real off stage. And then most of the set they don't even use because Henry Winkler Monty is mostly sat on the border of on and off stage. Very weird. I don't know why that exists, but we meet his. So we meet his sidekick, who Monty calls a servile parasitic toady in a loving way.
And he also says that Monty gave me my job and controls my existence. So he's a toady. He's just a toady. He looks more like Rush Limbaugh than Henry Winkler does.
He also later on, I believe, played the in the later seasons of Frasier, the owner of the radio station. So. Yeah.
Okay. And his producer is played by Joyce Guy. Is that right? Yes. And she's done a lot of TV. Her longest stint was 81 episodes of General Hospital.
Good for her.
Which is like a third of a year of General Hospital. But even so, it's pretty good.
She is air quote African American, because that is one of the jokes of Monty. Just disparagingly using the phrase.
She hates him.
Yes.
Like everybody on this show hates Henry Winkler. Yes. Everyone hates him. His kids hate him. His wife hates him. His kid's girlfriend hates him. His producer hates him. And he is a boat alone in the ocean.
Very weird. And so then, like, there's a little mailbag segment where a person writes in that's like an animal rights person, and of course they do not like him, and he's like, get her on the show, basically like big debate me energy. So, you know, stay tuned for more of that.
That's happening. That leads into segments later on. I wrote down that there's just a lot of other things he just like spitballs. Immigration policy.
He gives the audience like a multiple choice test of like, how, look, like, I guess it's like, are you going to have immigration troubles? Your multiple choice. How did you get to America on jet boat, plane, or magic carpet? And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Ugh. That's offensive, but also weak as shit.
And then he's got find a blind date for Janet Reno contest.
Yeah, he calls out immigrants with a bomb in their burnoose. They come over for the great Satan, and we just hand them the keys to a 7-Eleven. I'm like, that's the cringiest part. Maybe that's why this show didn't do so well, is that the parts that are cringy are actually like offensive.
The first time most people write comedy, and I am hearkening back to like high school when I would be put in groups in theater class and told write a funny scene, people's inclination, and also in improv, is to fight and is to argue. Like, arguments are funny. Yeah. People being put out are funny. People being mad is funny. And you quickly learn, like, it's like sketch 101, improv 101. Actually, no. The hardest thing to do is to make an argument funny. And the problem with a lot of sitcoms that are like, well, we're going to show the conservative point of view, is they make that the whole and only thing. And then instead of actually presenting like fleshed out characters, it's just a list of this liberal thinks stupid, this liberal thinks stupid, this liberal thinks stupid, this liberal thinks stupid. And there's no jokes. Like, there's
that
no
Gutfield show.
Yeah,
on Fox. I think the other thing too is that humor is a lot of American humor, and just, I guess, global humor, it's about punching up.
Yeah.
Is that it's satire takes down the high and mighty, because the rest of us are all, you know, peasants. We all have that kind of shared antipathy towards authority. Whereas conservative comedy starts at the top and it punches down.
Yeah.
And it doesn't last long enough because most people don't find that funny. They find it abusive because they're the groups that are being.
Yeah, like the weird brainworms part of it is very like they actually think they probably are punching up. Because they think that, like, those trans kids getting all these rights and stuff, so I'll make fun of, like, and it's like
winning all these medals. No. My kid doesn't get medals.
Yeah, like, do you understand? Like, there's not that many, comparatively, not that many trans kids, and a lot of them are killing themselves. It's just like there's just like a willful lack of context. So a lot of this is him punching down on like a girl with a nose ring. Like, what is she doing to you? I don't know. But also, I have problems with her as a character. We'll get to her.
But I think that, like, too, that he's punching down, but the rest of the characters are taking him to task for it.
Yeah.
He's being called on it by his producer, by his family, by, I mean, it's a small cast, but they're not setting him up as the correct person in any of these.
Yeah. Scenes. Well, and also he's being taken to task by all the people, all the randos in the opening credits, which are it's like a man on the street, people responding to the question, like, what do you think of Monty? And it's just like truly people on the street, probably a few writers, I would imagine, maybe some below the line, like off camera people, because I was wondering, what are they actually asking these people?
They're probably asking, what do you think of Rush Limbaugh? Rush
Limbaugh, yeah.
They're probably thinking that, and they get the authentic. Do you remember? Use the Upright Citizens Brigade television show where they did a song about this child's enormous penis, and they went to the streets and they had various people of various, you know, men on the street things singing this song, enormous penis. Well, they had them say enormous peanuts, but when you're dubbing in the voice, the mouth says something different. So that's what it is. They're asking one thing and they're playing it up as something else.
And hoping that those papers they had them signed are ironclad. so it's a weird theme. It kind of reminded me of Seinfeld, like the actual music and the font and stuff.
Very 90s.
Feels very like that specific strain.
It was interesting, but I didn't think it worked. I honestly thought, I didn't think it was opening credits. I thought it was like a news segment about the show we were about to see.
Oh, yeah. Because, again, but there's another thing coming up that's similar that's very bizarre. So the episode opens in the Monty household, which I wrote, the living room looks like the Boy Meets World living room to me. I don't know if they reused it later, maybe.
Fox versus ABC.
But yeah. It's more like what production companies. I don't know. But David Krumholtz is there and he's watching TV and Monty comes in and is basically like, did you watch my show, son? And son is like, yeah. So he makes his kid watch his show.
And he says, what do you like about it? He says, I liked all of it. And he says, what part? And he's like, all of it. And he says, like, okay, you're gonna watch it. And then David Krumholtz points out that my teachers hate you, my friends hate you, you know how mom feels. That was good.
Yeah Well, that's the thing, like, so David Krumholtz is a star. I mean, honestly, must see performance, so it's a spoiler, but he's I only really know him as an adult, as just like an adult actor who's in a bunch of stuff that I've seen. So seeing him as the precocious, as the Jonathan Taylor Thomas of this of this show is very cool. He's very good at it.
I remember the episode that I do remember. He gets all the great lines. He gets all the great lines.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because in the next scene, when Henry Winkler, when Monty goes into the kitchen, he gets a cold call, phone call, and it's Greenpeace, and he says, God damn, I keep looking. Oh, so.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sorry, you know, I gotta go. We got dinner on the table, and you know how whale tastes if it gets too cold. And it's like... I don't understand. What is the conservative problem with Greenpeace?
Do they... Well, of course. Because protecting whales means that fishing companies are impeded from making profit in some way.
Just so, like...
This was a big thing in the 90s.
Well, yeah, because around this time is when in the Seinfeld story arc where they are selling the pilot and the producer, I think played by Ron Rifkin, maybe, or Joel Green, like goes and joins Greenpeace. Like it's a thing. But it is like, I don't know what his point of view, because I'm like, I hear Greenpeace and I'm like, oh, that's a good thing. And then he's so angry at them and is like joking about eating whale. And I just don't, I mean, and maybe I'm just a snowflake.
There were definitely people who were anti-Greenpeace at the time. They were protesting boats. They were trying to shut down fishing and whaling, especially. It's the own the libs thing.
Yeah, gotta own them libs.
We gotta say that.
His wife comes in, and honestly, based on that, you know how mom feels about you lying. I was like, oh, he's divorced.
His wife, by the way, is played by Kate Burton, who is Richard Burton's daughter.
Oh.
Yeah.
He comes in and he's like hungry for dinner. He's like, I did like this line where he's like, remember family, Fran? Remember dinner? Like, it's like, it's a long ago concept. I thought they had good chemistry.
I thought so too, because she loves him, but also dislikes him.
Well, I mean, then there's the like good natured joking, I guess, of like, you know, why don't you make dinner? Make dinner. You're the woman. And then he says like, oh no, he said it. All Hillary. It's
like, yeah. Okay. It's
the other problem with conservative humor is that attitude of like, I'm being edgy. That's not funny when anyone does it across a political. No. If you say anything with the like, I'm a stinker, you're like, that's exhausting.
Yeah, it's something that you can't, it's like a nickname. You can't give it yourself, give it to yourself. It has to be bestowed upon you by other people. Now, you could be, I mean, you could just be an asshole that talks shit.
Yeah.
And people will be like, oh, he's edgy, I guess. But if your whole thing is, my name's Monty and I'm an edgy television personality, you're like, oh, okay.
It's his whole thing. That is his whole thing.
Yeah.
But at least the show knows that that's his whole thing most of the time.
Well, he wants her to cook an American meal for his American son, Greg, played by David Schwimmer. Who is coming home from several months from France, like the description said, he comes home France, from baby. Europe.
Yeah, so he comes in and he says like he got his brother David, right? That's his brother's name? Yeah.
Yeah.
A De Gaulle biography, which is code for just a nude mag. Or there's like a nude.
No, it wasn't a De Gaulle biography. It was a Nagal. Because Nagal is I mean, he was an artist in the 80s and 90s. He did the cover of that Duran Duran album.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. I love him.
Yeah. So he gets it to him and it's obviously a Playboy. He opens the centerfold and is like, oh, this is great.
I did note that. So about a year from when this episode airs. In spring 95, David Schwimmer will once again play a character coming back from the airport with a surprise girlfriend, which is at the end of Friends season one, where he comes home with Julie. So it is funny that that's what this is, where he comes home and he's got a surprise girlfriend, Grace Slick's daughter.
We almost didn't get David Schwimmer and Friends because of this show.
Yeah.
He has said that he did not like working on it because he felt that the writers didn't give him any leeway, any kind of improvisation, any kind of any of his input on the script. They just said, do the script. And it soured him on television that for a while he's like, I'm not going to audition for TV anymore. I'm done with it. And we almost didn't get Friends because of this show.
It is really weird seeing him on a family sitcom as opposed to a Friends sitcom. But like, it is weird seeing him like interacting like with Henry Winkler as like his dad and having those like, dad, I want you to understand. Because Friends was revolutionary in a way. And just the fact that it's like, these are 20-year-olds. There are no adults. They are the adults.
Yeah.
So like, they don't have people to run and talk to. So it is weird. But I still thought he did a really, really good job. Even with weird lines, like he's learning vegetarian cooking. It's utilitarian in the Thoreauian sense. Can you use that in a sentence, son? You Thoreauian like a girl. Like, that's okay.
Cool. We get introduced to Gina, the girlfriend, who I thought was pretty good. David Schwimmer walks in and they give big hugs and there's all that. And she walks in and she says, I need money for the meter. And David Schwimmer, Greg, goes, well, dad, give her the money for the meter. And he goes, who is she? And he goes, just give her the money for the meter. And then she's like, he's outside. And so he reaches into his pocket, gives her like some money, and she leaves. And Greg goes, so you like her? And David and then Monty goes, well, she's good with money. That's the only thing we know about her. And she's dressed in wonderful 90s clothing, which is a long overshirt.
Yeah, she's grunge. It took me a while because I was like, she looks normal to me. Then I was like, oh, wait a second. This is 1994. She's grunge. That is what they're trying to tell me. Yes. She's got a nose.
Very, very polished grunge. TV grunge.
Yeah. So then there's like a lot of the cooking is all over. Like there's a lot of cooking. They like at one point they say like, David, you cook. David Krumholtz. And he's like, cooking is for girls. And then Monty's like, that's my son. And then Gina's like, women are attracted to men who can cook. And then he's like, show me where the spices are or something.
Then he goes, let me show you the new spice rack.
Right.
And
yeah,
then they leave. So Krumholtz gets the good lines.
Yeah. Very weird. Oh, this is also, so they all leave and then it's just Gina and it's just Meathead and Archie.
Well, mom takes the Playboy and says, I'll go put this with your father's Nagals.
Yeah. They're like, nah. But then we get, you know, the showdown between and the daughter or the girlfriend. And so she says, like, she's a performer, et cetera. She's also a hairdresser. And then she, oh, God, for some reason, she says something about his hair. And is like, you're not just the president, are you? Or something.
You're not just the president. You're a client. That's an old joke from.
Which just that hit me of like, oh, man, hair club for men. And how like, I'm not just the president. I'm not just a customer. I'm also the president or whatever. Like that was just
that reverse it.
Go to joke.
Cy Sperling.
For like 10 years, the kids nowadays don't know. How many times is it? I'm also the president, you know.
Oh, this was 1994 sensibilities.
Yes.
Yeah. You felt it. So how did the two of them meet? They meet when she was doing a one woman show in France called I Gina.
What gives her the right?
Where and she was naked for part of it, a brief part, she said.
And then Henry Winkler Monty says, like, you were naked. He's like, seriously, you were naked in public. And then she says, it wasn't a bakery or anything. It was a theater. Which I thought, I laughed at that. That was a good joke. It wasn't a bakery or anything. He basically calls her a stripper then.
Yeah.
She was naked in public.
He really hammers it home to a point where it's very awkward and very inappropriate.
And then the act break comes on, like, she's like, hey, I've seen your show. You're fat on TV.
Like, no one likes, and there are a couple, like, there's like the running gag too of people don't like his hair throughout the entire episode. They're just jokes about his hair. It just looks like 90s hair.
Yeah.
Henry Winkler.
Well, so act two starts with is he in his office or on the stage? Turns out he's on a stage. It looks like an office. And they got Ann Sherman, the person who wrote in the Pro Animals.
Do you know who that actor was?
Was that Thora Birch?
It was Thora Birch.
Little Thora Birch.
Yeah, she had already done at that point Patriot Games, Hocus Pocus, Monkey Trouble, and 30 episodes of the TV show Day by Day.
Well, and then she's better than this now. So she's there because she, like any thinking human who is not a sociopath, likes animals and likes animals being alive. Whereas Monty's response to this child on his TV show is, you know, we have baby seals on the show. You want to see my nifty belt? And it's like,
yeah, he just wants to, the person he's picking the fight with is a 12-year-old, an 11-year-old.
This is where I wrote my notes. Conservatives are assholes, because like you can like believe that all seals need to be skinned and made into belts exclusively. Seals need to do nothing else. Are you going to tell that to a like 12-year-old on your TV show in a dickish way, in a way intended to make them angry? If you're picking fights with 12-year-olds, you're an asshole. I don't know. Oh, wild.
It's not Henry Winkler. He's a good man.
We love Henry Winkler.
We love Henry Winkler. He's on my credit card.
Hell yeah.
The picture of me meeting Henry Winkler at a Comic-Con. The nicest man in the world.
Which is weird that he's so nice. Playing this. Yeah.
And produced it.
And then so like back at home, vegetarian lasagna is coming up. Yep. And this is when, oh God, that's when like, what Greg says, like, oh, France, like I learned about basil, oregano, and Gina. And then Henry Winkler eats some of it, is like, oh yeah, I like two of those things.
Because of course he likes the lasagna.
It's very weird that like the initial reaction to basil and oregano are is just like, ugh, whatever, you know.
Plants from the ground.
Gross. European spices. No.
The European spice of basil.
So then there's a huge fight. And at this point, I do want to point out that as much as I disagree with not just Monty's politics, but just his attitude in general, Gina also gotta cool it down, girl.
She's on the attack.
On an 11. Because again, you're in a stranger's home. Like, maybe cool it. I don't like, just got to get on those anti-anxiety meds, baby.
It was the early 90s.
Yeah, they didn't have
it. We were all on Paxil.
Yeah. So there's a fight. And then the mom gets a classic quiet, you know, one at a time, kind of.
It's still a family sitcom. There's still going to be some tropes.
And then that's when the bombshell that we all saw coming, I mean, it was deployed in the cold open and it's been falling this entire time. Fiance. They're
engaged.
Dun, dun, dun.
He met someone in France who taught him the joys of vegetarian cooking, public theater, and he fell for her, and he is not going to law school anymore, Dad.
He's going to become a chef, damn it.
Which is, honestly, much respect. I couldn't do it, but I really respect the people who have.
What? Told your parents that you're not going to be what they want you to be? He says, while dressed as a beautiful woman.
Again, my parents, I love them. After doing this for 20 years, I don't believe they fully know what I do for a living, which is write ads for the healthcare industry.
See? Easy, succinct. You know, of course, Monty is not happy about this.
No.
Krumholtz does like get up. He starts to go to the TV and they're like, where are you going? It's like, I'm going to the TV. And then do they ask him like, and then what are you doing? Turning towards the TV.
Yeah, it's because it's a stupid question. I'm gonna turn on the TV. What then? What? Well, what do you think I'm going to do?
Turn towards the TV. What's the next step? Put my eyes on the TV. Yeah, this was, again, good line, you know. And then we find out that, obviously, Monty's parents-in-law did not like him either. The wife's parents also hated him.
Yes, and that was part of their wedding invitation. I believe that was one of the jokes. Yes.
This is a weird thing that, like, conservatives, like, Monty has in common with, like, the Selling Sunset real estate ladies, which is, like, they're very proud about, like, I'm a bitch. Some people might say that I'm difficult to work with, but I just think that I'm a boss and I get things done. They hated me when they first met. Like, the being proud of how horrible you are and how many people hate you. Like, that's such a reality, like, socialite character trait, and it's also very conservative.
We also get we don't get the commercial break yet. Because Gina and Monty have the talk where she's like, look, I don't really get along with your politics. You definitely don't get along with my politics, but there's a person in between the two of us who loves you very much, and he's upstairs packing his bags to never see you again. Can we make this work for the sake of Schwimmer?
Yeah, she says, like, you know, I did the same thing to my dad, and he hasn't spoken to me in years. So, like, or I haven't spoken to him in years. So do you want the same thing to happen? Ooh.
It's clear that Monty loves his kids. He loves his wife. He loves his kids. He treats them terribly, but he definitely loves them in a way that we'll see overcomes the surface tension.
Yeah, it's so, like, when Greg comes down and, like, talks to him and, like, is explaining to him, like, I love cooking. I found this thing. And this is my favorite Schwimmer line of the episode, is it doesn't feel like a job except for casseroles. And it's one of those things, like, he does the David Schwimmer thing. And this is what is great about David Schwimmer on Friends, for the first half of Friends before they started writing him like a lunatic, is there are line deliveries. He makes line deliveries jokes. Like, I'm assuming you're looking for another reason besides to get you into bed. Like, there are just things that stick with me of the cadence and the way that he says things. And that casseroles thing was like, that's David Schwimmer. That's super cool.
Him rising above the material.
Yeah.
And giving it, being an actor. God, yeah. He is an actor. And I can completely sympathize with him saying, this is a very structured house of cards with all these lines building on each other and reactions to each other. There is not a lot of playfulness in this. But it would have been much more fun if they had.
I would love to see Winkler and Schwimmer, you know.
Do they hang out? Do they hang out now? Have they hung, like, said hi to each other lately?
God, don't bring up Monty.
Don't bring up. So Monty relents. There are hugs. There is applause for these characters that the studio audience has known
for a couple hours, maybe. Yeah, there's like, yay, we're just happy to be somewhere.
And then we got a whole bunch of really cute old ads for, I got black toothbrushes. Did you see that? Like,
no, I mean, on YouTube, I had to fast forward through, but I did see the Pop-Tarts one, which made me tell my husband, make sure we order Pop-Tarts. Which, man, the aesthetic of the 1994 aesthetic of everything is fisheye lens, is blasted with saturation, and everything is just, like, weirdly surreal. Like, it's such a weird, and it's like, this is an insurance commercial. Like, what are you doing? Why does it look like a Busta Rhymes music video for, like, starring the Smurfs? Like, what is this?
We also saw ads for Beethoven 2.
Yes.
Starring the late, great Charles Grodin.
According to that.
And a Taco Bell ad for 99 cent tacos.
79, 89, 99. God, good times.
I miss tacos.
I love Taco Bell so much. And then also as part of the commercials, all of a sudden, Henry Winkler is on the screen giving you a PSA about like encouraging education amongst your
and
it's in the Monty set as Monty. So I was just like, is this part of the show? Is this like every week this conservative asshole who the show hates, like the point of him as a character is to hate him, he's giving us messages?
Or was this Henry Winkler saying, look, I'm not a bad guy, I support teachers?
Yeah,
me personally, not Monty, me personally, Henry, I support teachers. Love. And you should support teachers.
So then, so the stinger is, God, this is, I think, he has the little girl on again. And he's like, let me tell you, animal experimentation can be good. I have a lot of studies here about how experimenting on animals has cured like diseases that have like crippled children, or like basically really like, first of all, being pro animal experimentation, wild time we were having in the 90s, 30 years ago.
That's a box that you really have to like think twice before you check.
Yeah, real weird. And but then like to be like, I need to invite this 12-year-old girl on to tell her how good animal studies are and then give her details to the point where she starts crying. It's like, what the fuck? But then they go to commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, like, I don't know. Basically, she was joking.
She goes, like, oh, they're going to hate you. Oh,
they're going to hate you. Boom. And I was like,
what's Monty?
Monty. And then the end credits is all of the cast members, all the characters on the show talking about how much they don't like Monty.
I'm glad that we did this one because it let me revisit a show that I thought was funny back in 1994. And I think it's still funny. I think the jokes themselves are funny. I think the positions that Monty takes up are straw man positions. Like they're made to be assaulted.
Yeah. They're made to be, I mean, this is liberals writing a conservative character.
Yeah. So he's painted very broad. He is just like, I hate immigration. I love animal testing. I hate whales. Like, it's caricature.
I hate your nose ring.
Yeah, I hate your nose ring. And, you know, vegetarians, boo.
Yeah, oregano, ghoul.
So I'm glad that we found an episode. I wish I could find the other ones. I remember the third episode being very funny because David Krumholtz's character wants to buy condoms.
Oh, hell yeah, that sounds funny.
And he asks his dad to go along with him to buy the condoms. And so he's just saying like he wants to be prepared in case this thing's happened. And like Winkler is like ashen. And he's looking around and he's like, what's the good kind? What's the best kind I can get? He's like, this one has ribs. And then Winkler goes, kid, you want ribs? You go to the Sizzler. Which I thought was funny. And then he says, the way you have to do this is you got to pad it out with other things like some soda or eye patches. Are we good with eye patches? So how are we on our eye patch supply? So as they're checking out, there's like some freak out, and like Monty tries to get through. He's like, I'd like to buy a couple of these and these eye patches. I remember it being funny, and I thought
I would like to see all 13 episodes.
If anyone watching or listening has access to this, Henry Winkler, you produce the show. I beg of you, let us know. You're a good man.
Release the Winkler cut of release the Monty cut. Whatever.
I liked it a lot.
You ready for some must-have facts?
Oh my gosh, for the show that lasted three episodes, I want to hear them.
So, the ratings for the week, it was watched by 8.1 million people, but where do you think that ranks in the week?
Like 30, 60?
Number 79.
Ooh!
79th. 8.1 million. The top shows of the week, number six were Roseanne. Numbers five and four were episodes of Seinfeld. Three was 60 Minutes. Two was Home Improvement. And one was football, just like a football thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Football always wins.
This aired as part of the Fox Tuesday night lineup, which was Monty, Rock, and then America's Most Wanted. So aside from the...
Did you ever watch Rock? I really liked Rock when it came out. It was a very well acted, very well written show. It felt like every episode was like a play. It was very well done.
Man, I should look it up. Trying to find it.
Next R-O-C. Time we do 90s shows, maybe.
Yeah.
It lasted a little longer than Monty.
So what are you watching on this night of television? Which, so I will also say, I know, so January 11th, 1994 was my dad's, that was my dad's 39th birthday. So I don't remember where I was. I remember where I was January 11th, 1995. So whatever. So also, that's my dad's birthday. He figured it out. The social security number. But I do remember this night of television, like all these episodes. ABC, Full House is airing on ABC. Jesse has a big decision to make when his record becomes a big hit in Japan, and he is asked to tour Asia for a year. On CBS is an episode of Rescue 911. A teenager stops breathing because of an allergic reaction. A driver is stopped by a suspicious-looking policeman. Okay. On NBC is airing Saved by the Bell, The College Years. Zach takes a part-time job at the Student Health Center to be close to Kelly. And on Fox, we've got Monty. Monty is annoyed when Greg returns from France with a nose-ringed vegetarian fiancé. That newspaper had a longer, better description of Monty.
A much better description.
Are you watching Full House, Rescue 911, Saved by the Bell, The College Years, or Monty? What a motley crew.
Here's the truth. I would probably be watching Saved by the Bell and not enjoying it. Because I thought I would enjoy that show, and I watched many episodes of it, and I did not like that show at all.
It is so weird that The College Years aired in primetime. I remember when that happened too, and I was because like it wasn't a different show. It wasn't it wasn't like all of a sudden they got like a writing staff with like a bunch of cheap writers came in. It's still the same show. Now it's on at 8 for some reason. I'm definitely watching Full House. Because I remember that episode. But I also loved Rescue 911.
Really?
Oh, I watched that all my family watched that all the time as a kid.
I never saw it.
Which is just William Shatner. I don't know if they're playing. I haven't seen it in obviously 30 years, but it's built around real 911 calls, and they have actors act it out, and William Shatner is the host and narrator. It's like Unsolved Mysteries, but with 911 calls. The one I specifically remember was a kid who was brushing his teeth and was running, and he fell, and he jammed the toothbrush. I only remember that because I would walk around brushing my teeth and my parents would be like, remember that Rescue 911 episode?
You are a fool. Yeah. You are a fool, sir. Fool, ma'am.
So, man, I was definitely watching Full House, which that's like, hey, that's an episode. I remember that episode. Yeah. Wild. TV was nuts. On IMDb, Zero Monty Heads gave this no rating, which is wild because this is the second week in a row where we've done episodes with no rating, and last week was Webster, which theoretically should have ratings.
Yeah,
that's a show. No,
again, but Webster was another one that's not available on streaming. Yeah. Did we watch it on YouTube?
No, Webster's on Pluto.
Okay, so it is on
Webster
Pluto.
Goes off and on, but it it took a while. I would rate this like a 6.
Yeah, I'd give it a good maybe 6.5.
Yeah, because I did laugh, and I do think that it actually for a family sitcom built around a character who's intentionally horrible, it was fun. Still fun.
I would say that I found this funnier joke for joke than the Kate and Allie episode that we watched.
Wow, hot take.
I think so. Not as funny as some, but probably just as funny as Spin City. That was about maybe 6 years later.
It's a weird, the premise is so Paul Lynch show that I'm surprised that they weren't called out on that. No, All in the Family is the real point of comparison. It's so blatantly that it is kind of like wild, but it had been 20 years, so they can do that. Who had the must-see performance in this episode?
Dave Krumholtz.
Yeah, definitely.
As the youngest son, he was... I don't know. I just like watching him in things.
Every line was a joke. And if it wasn't a joke, he made it funny. He was great.
Yeah.
And Schwimmer was also good, but he didn't get any jokes. He got laughs out of things that he was like making.
Yeah. I get the feeling he didn't get the jokes because he's kind of playing it as the straight guy. And the times where he got the blatant jokes, you could tell he was kind of uncomfortable with it.
Oh, yeah.
Because there were the bad jokes weren't good. The good jokes were good. The bad jokes were not good.
Very bad.
Which is, I mean, a rule for life.
Yeah, man. And must other people see this episode of television?
You know what? Yes. Go out and find this episode.
If you are a recent Winkler head, if you love him, Barry, and love Henry Winkler finally getting his flowers, I would say, yeah, fucking definitely check this out. It's an interesting footnote in Henry Winkler's post Happy Days, post An American Christmas Carol, pre Arrested Development career.
The lean years. The years where we're like, what's Henry Winkler doing? What's he up to? Now he's Henry Winkler. Everyone loves Henry Winkler.
Hurrah! Ethan, where can people find you on the internet if they want to talk about Monty?
Check me out on EthanK55 on Instagram. Having a ball over there, having a great time, and support WGA strike.
Yeah, and everyone.
How about you, Barb?
Oh my God! Well, people can follow me on Instagram at Barb Hardley, also on YouTube at Barb Hardley, where I have a little bit of content. You can also follow me as a boy at Brett White on Twitter and Instagram, and you can also rate and review the show in iTunes, which would be great, or leave comments on YouTube, or just do anything to interact would be awesome. You can email musthaveseentv@gmail.com if you have requests. I will say, June is Pride Month, and I have thoughts. I think we're going to do a decade-by-decade dive into closeted actors and weird queer representation on television, which turns out, which times out perfectly, because 50s is next. So I'm going to figure out something to watch for that.
We got to do these more frequently then. We got to get on a good schedule.
Knock out every week, because I would like to do the entire journey, because it's such a good...
Let's make it happen. Let's make it happen.
Every time. Oh, boy. I blew my... This is my 1950s drag look. What am I doing? Oh, well, whatever.
You'll find something else. You'll find something else.
No, many more. I ordered a real, real slutty dress that's coming... but yeah, no, so please keep following, keep listening, and talk to us. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to everybody for listening, and we'll see y'all next time. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Mwah. Okay, sure, I'll kiss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.